Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez. I'm your co-host, Steve Kim, from Los Angeles, California, a city that will have a new football coach. A man that's very curious about this is my beloved partner from the Bay Area, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, I just have one bit of advice for the new L.A. Rams coach next year. It has nothing to do with football. If Eric Dickerson asks for sideline passes, just say how many and get the hell out of the way and be very nice to him.
Yeah, I'm going to make it my life's mission to never have him criticize my job. No job security there when Eric Dickerson has a problem with you. But, man, free at last. No more Jeff Fisher. Sweet Jesus.
Gabe, we have an unbelievable amount of boxing to talk about spanning the globe. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and we're getting some tweets set up. The president is already on board. You could tweet us at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Let's get started with round number one, and it was indeed Saturday Night Fever across the globe. And from Manchester, England, Gabe, I want to start off with this fight because, quite frankly, I think it might be the fight of the year, and I think the only thing that really rivals Vargas Salido. But these two British heavyweights, Dillian White and Derek Chisora, and it was Dillian White winning a close split decision in 12 in a fight. There really were no losers. Gabe, what a battle.
Unbelievable fight, and it was like the old-school heavyweight pace. Both guys bringing it. You know, after a while, I think if they did a rematch, I mean, Chisora, I think, can grow from this in terms of his conditioning because he hit a wall halfway through the fight, and you could see it. It became about, okay, just it's like a video game. He was, like, waiting for his endurance bar to fill back up, and then he'd attack in, like, the last minute or back end of the round. But I thought he landed the more telling blows, brutal body shots. He tired out White. And seemed to really rock him when he landed, which was, you know, fairly often through the fight. The fifth and average rounds, but all the way to the end. I mean, they were hurting each other and rocking each other. Did you think that there was knockdowns? One of them was a slip, but when Chisora hit White in the 12th round and sent him careening through the ropes, I thought that was a missed knockdown because he would have been on his face from a punch if he was falling into the ring, but instead he was almost falling out of the ring. And that was the thing that kept him up. But tremendous fight. I wish they both could win. And they have.
Gabe, technically, and again, this is a judgment call. The rule is if you get hit by a punch and the only thing keeping you upright is the ropes, the referee has the option and the right to call it a knockdown. But again, it is a judgment call. As for Derek Chisora in conditioning, there's an old saying from Customato, square pegs do not die round. I think that's what he is. And that's who he is.
Yeah.
But I have to give these two guys credit. There was hatred and there was animosity. And Derek Chisora, as I said on my article for UCN Live today, on Wednesday or Thursday, he threw a table at Dillian White. And then on Saturday night, they both threw the kitchen sink at each other. This was probably the best 12-round heavyweight fight since Sergei Lyakovich took the WBO heavyweight title from Lehman Brewster. And if you go back a decade before that, right around 1997, I remember David Tu and Ike Iwabuchi putting on a rousing affair on HBO's Boxing After Dark. It just goes to show you, you don't need great fighters to have a great fight. Because let's be honest, I think even most fans in the UK, they'll tell you, hey, these guys are domestic level. They've had some losses. They're never going to be upper tier, upper echelon heavyweights. But they had a certain style and temperament that really fit well together. And I get the sense, unfortunately for them, It's one of those fights where they left pieces of themselves inside that ring. They may never truly recover, but I really believe this fight, again, should be honored with something, because what a tussle between White and Chisora. And while this was a height of athletic competition, Gabe, Anthony Joshua, we knew, was going to have an easy time. At least I felt that way. It's one of the few things I got right this past weekend. But, boy, were you surprised, given the fact Molina actually fought fairly well at times against Deontay Wilder, looked so timid in there from the very beginning against the defending IBF heavyweight champion?
Yeah, I think it's maybe just styles make fights. I didn't expect him to fight like that, but I've always felt that there's a huge difference between Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua, and it's the way he holds himself in there. He's not, when you look at him, you know, you look at Wilder and watching his development, imagine if you're studying to fight him, you go, you know, he makes a lot of mistakes, and he can be hurt, he's been dropped, but you look at Joshua, and he's technically very sound, great balance, really scary power, and so you kind of wonder, you know, you go in, I think, with a little more fear, and then you could see that with Molina, that he didn't quite see where it was that he could find his place to attack, and he just got bombed out of there. I think because he's shown some quality, this has to be considered a good win, at least, for Anthony Joshua.
Well, considering the fact, again, in all reality, much like in Oscar Valdez at featherweight, you could easily say, and I don't think a lot of people would disagree, these guys are prospects who happen to have major world title belts. And you're right, if you look at it in that perspective, Anthony Joshua, to beat a guy in the way he did it, again, because that's important, like Eric Molina, based on his track record, in what is essentially, what, his 18th pro fight? That's pretty impressive in that perspective. The difference between Joshua and Deontay is Wilder, is just that. It's precision, accuracy, and technique. Those are things that I don't think Deontay Wilder will ever be able to truly match as it relates to Anthony Joshua. And Gabe, how high are you on this fight? They made the announcement right after the fight. And again, nobody knows exactly which network stateside will televise this, HBO or Showtime. But it's a signed, sealed, and delivered contract. It's a done deal. There's no hemming or hawing. There's no marinating. There's no more negotiating. Vladimir Klitschko will face Anthony Joshua April 29th at Wembley Stadium. How viable is this fight in 2017?
Oh, I think it's great. It's just going to kick off a fantastic year. I think we're set up for some great fights. And you look at what Tyson Fury did. And I like Tyson Fury, but the guy was never really that. After a while, had become very inactive, very hard to plan around. And it just became all about kind of his public mental breakdowns. And, you know, I feel bad for the guy that he won the lottery and then wasn't able to cash it. But things have to move on. And if you look at the way they've promoted Joshua and moved him, the guy fights often. This year he fought three times. He fought five times last year. So this passing of the torch is for it to happen this way, this soon, I think is great. Because if Joshua, and I think he will win, I think they'll win by knockout, he gets that torch, he's going to actually run with it and do something with it, as opposed to Tyson Fury.
I think age and size matter in this matchup. Looking at those guys, and again, it could be camera angles, one guy is bare-chested, the other guy's in clothes. I'll be honest with you, Anthony Joshua looks so hulking and so much bigger than Klitschko, who for years was used to being the physical force in that ring, and he's never had the greatest chin. And we know one thing, Anthony Joshua has nuclear power in both hands. I think youth shall be served. Gabe, moving on, it was Fight On for old USC at the Galen Center on Showtime. We have a new WBA regular 126-pound champion, Abner Matas, outboxes Jesus Cuellar in 12, and the IBF junior middleweight title stays in Houston. Jermall Charlo takes on Julian Williams, and he stops him in 5. Gabe, I'm not saying Matas didn't win, but I got to tell you, what was Jack Reese doing? I thought there was an incessant amount of clinching and holding. I don't want to say it ruined the fight. It sure took a lot of the action away from it, in my view.
Yeah, it was. You know, and Matas has been a bit of a holder a clutcher, a grabber, as you would say. It didn't drive me too crazy, but there was a lot of it, and it could have been stopped in this fight. But you know, that said, Modest, sort of like Ray Beltran, he showed his experience, he showed his skill set, ability to move backwards and then wait and counter, and just kind of pick and peck and poke away at Cuellar, and he just showed more dimensions in the fight. I thought it was a close fight, but I had Morris winning. I didn't have a big problem with it.
Yeah, I had him winning 114-113. I think Cuellar tried hard, but simply too slow, too plodding, did not have quick enough feet to really stem some of the movement of Abner Morris, who showed more dimensions. But I still get the sense Abner Morris is very beatable at 126. And Gabe, if the sport of boxing is to move forward and get out from under this malaise, and again, we are talking about political factions, the fracturing of the business, people being on the other side of the street, the Bloods and the Crips, the Hatfields and McCoys, a fight with Abner Morris, who now has a version of the WBA title, and Oscar Valdez, who's with Top Rank and HBO, these are the type of fights boxing needs to make. You know what? Morris Santa Cruz was fine, but I've seen it. And what have I preached for at least 5-6 years? I want some fight variation, and I really believe Abner Morris against Frank Espinoza's old new champion, I think that's an unbelievable storyline, and you know what? And I think it draws very well in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's a hell of a fight, you know. But I think there's other fights as well for Abner and within his own universe. I would like to see that cross pollination. Promoters like Al Haymon and Bob Arum working together. Unfortunately, I don't think that's what's going to happen. So I wonder where Abner goes next. I know he probably wants revenge with Leo Santa Cruz and is looking at the winner of his rematch with Carl Frampton. That's also, another good matchup. So we'll see. I mean, I do like that matchup. Would Espinoza make that fight?
That's a great question. My understanding is, in texting Frank, if they said, Frank, if the money is right, would you do that fight next? I don't think Mr. Espinoza would walk to the fight. He would Usain Bolt his way to sign that deal. Gabe, Jermell Charlo, not going to lie to you, I had Julian Williams, and just when I thought Julian Williams had settled himself and was beginning to take over, he hung a curveball and he got hit with a huge uppercut, and that ended up basically knocking him out. Here's my question to you, and I posed it to other people when we did the 10 count earlier today. I get it. People get hit with big shots, and it happens. But are you more alarmed that Julian Williams was so wobbly after being shaken up by a jab in the second round for Charlo? Did we find out something about Julian Williams we had not detected before?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about it, you know, all day. And to say that Williams is suddenly chinny would be to say that Charlo doesn't really hit all that hard. And I think the guy's, what, like 19 knockouts, 25 fights? I think he hits pretty hard, and that was a shotgun jab. We've seen power punchers like Sergey Kovalev drop people with jabs before. It is possible. Some guys shoot it like a lead, and so I think he got caught cold a little bit, or just got caught off guard. It was a flash. He got right back up. He was a little wobbly. I think that Charlo just is that guy. I mean,
Gabe.
I muted myself. I've watched that knockout a bunch of times, at least the shot, the uppercut that landed, that set up the knockout. And at first I thought, Julian kind of took a picture of his work. He landed a 1-2 and stayed too long. But the counter was so quick and the shot was so brutal. I mean, I'm impressed that he got up and was able to keep going. I think he just fought on pure instinct and then got dropped and was, I think, it was a merciful stoppage. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think – I don't know. We'll find out in his next fight. This is the thing we do know, is that this pattern of Al Haymon moving guys to title shots, having faced no adversity, is a problem. They were talking about how Julian, on the undercard, he hadn't – I think he lost one round and 150. And I'm thinking that means that they've just been giving him guys that he could beat. And maybe they got experience, but it's also about when you get guys. So, like Joaquin Alcin, that guy was well past it. Yes, he's got experience, but I don't think that's the same thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, this might be the first power puncher that he's faced. So right. Maybe he's got a chin. I don't know. We'll have
Here's
to see
another
him face
fact.
Another one.
Julian Williams has not fought since March, and this is a young man who's still a prospect. And to be fair and to be accurately factual, Jermell Charlo had only fought one time prior in 2016. But Julian Williams and his trainer-manager, Stephen Breadman Edwards, were yearning for more activity, to not be so rusty, to stay in shape, to be sharp. They were not afforded that opportunity. Why not? You know, and again, layoffs can affect fighters in different ways. Not everyone wants the activity. Other issue, there was no drug testing for this fight. Now, say what you want, but it was not me, it was not you, it was not anyone else. But wasn't it not the PBC who proudly proclaimed, thumping their chest with the megaphone, that we're going to be doing comprehensive, real drug testing for all our fights? That didn't happen, did it, Gabe?
No, it didn't. And you know, honestly, it can't just be one guy becomes the PED guy and is the only guy that asks the question. The media needs to be – they're the mediator. They are between – the viewing audience or the general public and the powers that be, and they needed to be more armed. You can I was tweeting about this. We were talking about it throughout, but I was talking about it last week that there was no testing for the fight. And if you go to USADA's website, as I said on the show, you can type in a boxer's name, or you can go to their boxing section, and it'll show you all the people that are being tested through each quarter of the year. This fight was not one of those fights, and people needed to come to the midweek press conferences and the international conference calls and all that stuff and be asking the questions. It shouldn't be post-fight that someone's like, hey, what about drug testing? And the follow-up to Richard Schaefer, who said, well, we did it. We used to do VADA and USADA. And it's like, well, no, Golden Boy used to do that when you ran that company. This is your card. But behind him was a banner that said Premier Boxing Champions. So he can't say, I'm an independent promoter, and we're not doing drug testing. This was a PBC card. Regardless of the network, it had the banner. And these guys said they were going to do 365 testing, random Olympic-style testing. We've always asked what that means. Where is the program? Why didn't they have testing for this fight?
And someone will say, well, how come Julian Williams didn't speak up, or his management? I don't know. Well, maybe because the management also promotes the other side.
And they've spoken up. I mean, they've been on B-Scene saying, look, we want sponsorship. We want testing. We would like somebody else to pay for it because they weren't making that kind of money. We've had the conversation. So it's very clear that when this fight was made, they can't make that demand of Charlo. And he's also, like you say, he's advised or managed or promoted by their advisor, manager, promoter, Al Heyman. So people need to put that pressure on these guys and these individual promoters. Richard Schaefer left a lot of openings. Why don't you do drug testing anymore? You guys were the first guys to do it, and you made a big deal about it. Where'd it go?
Moving on, HBO from Omaha, Nebraska, CenturyLink Center. Terrence Crawford retains his WBA, WBC junior welterweight titles by dispatching the overmatched and quite frankly embarrassing John Molina in 8, and lightweight Ray Beltran dominates Mason Menard in 7. Gabe, John Molina is what he is. This is the worst I've ever seen him. And for him to come in, not even close to being on weight, I thought to me, it was a bad performance. He's never been Baryshnikov in there, but good Lord, he looked like he had 2 left feet. As I wrote today, he looked like a drunken guy with vertigo in there.
Yeah, terrible. Like, he had that shot, and just, wait a minute, I shouldn't have had that shot the whole time. And it just was like, it was embarrassing, honestly, and I like John. But, I mean, for everybody involved, like, why did they make this fight? I mean, how much of a easy fight did Terrence Crawford need?
Gabe, you're hatering. You're telling me that didn't wrap up Terrence Crawford's fight of the year honors? For shame.
Yeah, it's like looking at, the Spielberg game was probably looking at Chisora White going, you know what I hate about this fight? Too many punches, not enough feint, not enough shoulder rolls. But, thinking of the Heyman issue, just to jump back really quick before I forget, both those guys, White and Chisora, I think fought 4 times this year. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that contributed to their ability to put on that kind of show.
I've said it for years, one of the reasons why, and this is one of the things I pointed out before the ill-fated Devin Alexander, Tim Bradley fight at the decrepit barn that was the Silverdome, I said, they don't have a lot of activity. This game is so much about being in sync, and it's about timing. And that's one of the reasons why I hypothesize a lot of these vaunted super fights don't work out. Guys are rusty. Ring rust does absolutely exist. It is not an urban myth. And John Molina is a Heyman guy. And this is what I mean, though, about, like you said, the cross-pollinization of boxing and making the best fights. Al Heyman has shown in 2016 with John Molina and Dominic Wade, he's willing to give up spare parts to be used for cannon fodder on the other side of the street to get these guys paid. I understand that. But he's not putting up assets. So he's not putting up Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, or Adrian Broner to fight Terrence Crawford. He's giving you John Molina. And I have a theory. John Molina says, I grew out of the weight, this, this, and that. I heard a couple of things. I heard from one source that once again he contacted an old crony that he decided to give a job as a strength and conditioning coach. Well, that didn't work out. But I also have another theory. Okay, and this could, I could be completely wrong about this, but Gabe, tell me if I'm just going completely Asian Oliver Stone here. You go back to when this fight was announced. I was actually in Chicago / South Bend for the Miami-Notre Dame game. That was the weekend of October 29th, so that's when the fight was announced, okay? So it's not that much time. But during that stretch, from the time he fought, June 11th, to that time, I think he was, along with many other PBC fighters, under the impression, I get the rest of the year off. There's no fight for me. I got to wait for the next Waddle and Reed infusion, so I get to have a vacation. But by the time he got that fight, well, I need the money, but I'm 180-some-odd pounds. Does that sound plausible to you?
I think so. Or at the very least, you know, even if it's not, I don't think I'm going to fight the rest of the year, it's kind of hard to stay sharp when it's so erratic and you just don't know. I mean, in a perfect world, everybody just stays in shape and ready in an Al Heyman universe. But, you know, if you're watching how everything's going, there doesn't seem to be much of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Guys getting cut off all the time. Have you been following Vonis' timeline just the last couple days?
Oh, he's back to tweeting. Isn't it glorious, Gabe? It's great.
Yeah. It really is. It's like a fountain of truth. You know, and I think the guys are a lot more frustrated and having a lot of trouble keeping that focus. I mean, I guess that's a difference. But for John, he's fought at lightweight. He outgrew the weight, now he's a welterweight. Okay. Well, we'll see if his buddy can get him all ready for that campaign.
Yeah, and Gabe, Ray Beltran, I have to tell you, say what you want about him. There used to be a time he was a journeyman. He was a sparring partner. He had that mentality. But just looking at the way he fights, so composed, and taking his time, picking off shots, countering, and the placement of his punches. This guy really has learned how to fight, hasn't he?
Well, just like pure economy of motion. Let the kid burn himself out. You could just see it, you know. Menard was – they were fighting at this pace that was just – you know, really, I didn't think they'd be able to keep it up. Beltran making the kid fight constantly, but not wasting anything, not using herky-jerky movements, not jumping all over the ring. And Menard, I think, just at this level for the first time, I thought he moved too much. I thought he was just too much head movement, too much like jerking around, and too much like after a while you could see his what set up the knockout even was his form started to fall all apart, and he would start making weird decisions with his footwork. And Beltran just picked him apart, went to his body. When he got the guy on the ropes, he made sure that he beat on him up and down. It was a beautiful performance. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I mean, Beltran was that guy that was looking like he had sparring partner syndrome. And, you know, from 2011, he has a knockout. And then everything else between is a lot of rounds. And this year, he's got 3 knockouts. So, you know, he's figured something out.
The term that I use for what Menard went through was getting sent to deep waters. Listen, I like Menard. Maybe it was too much too soon. And it's like that kid that can kind of swim and dog paddle on the shallow side of the pool. And he does a couple of laps at the 6-foot level. And then you say, okay, you know what? Go out there and swim in the beach. And next thing you know, you got to get Baywatch. You got to get David Hasselhoff to rescue the kid. That's what he went through. Deep waters. And maybe it should have been Pamela Anderson. I should have referenced that. I'd rather be rescued by her than David Hasselhoff. Gabe, Saturday night, it is the final one at the Forum for Bernard Hopkins. 51 years young, taking on Joe Smith. Joe Smith can punch. Andres Fonfara will attest to that. How much of a shot does he really have? I mean, would Golden Boy dare get Hopkins beat in what is supposed to be his ceremonial final fight?
Well, Golden Boy's gotten people beat when they shouldn't many times in the past, or at least, you know, more than a few.
But not recently, though. Not all that recently, though.
I feel like they've become very good with their matchmaking the last few years, really making the right decisions, bringing guys along. They've become, considering down there I always gave them so much shit, now that I'm like semi-retirement from the sport, from the beat, definitely, they're really good. So I look at Joe Smith, and yeah, he can punch, but he was also doing something very specific off of a big flaw of Fonfara, who leaves himself standing tall and exposed when punching. Bernard Hopkins doesn't do that. He doesn't even fight that way. So I think Bernard will tame him and take him into deep waters. I don't think he'll finish him. Smith will give an honest effort, but I think the executioner goes the distance one last time and gets a win.
Also on this HBO triple header, featherweight prospect Joseph Diaz takes on Horacio Garcia, and WBO cruiserweight titleist Oleksandr Usyk makes his HBO and stateside debut against Tabizo Machunu. Gabe, are you intrigued at all to see Usyk?
I am. I like the way he fights, man. And it's just, he could be a star, I think. You know, he's got the look of a star. He's got the feel in there. And just like an excitement to him. But I like that he's got all the punches. He's got good balance, good boxing skills, and a big punch. Anytime he fights, I want to see it.
I am intrigued by what we're going to see, and I know there's going to be that natural inclination to compare him to Golovkin because he's with K2 and Tom Loeffler. He's from that part of the world. But I think the reality is he's like his fellow countrymen from the Ukraine. He's like a 200-pound version of Vasyl Lomachenko. And Gabe, real quickly here, from Auckland, New Zealand, we have a new WBO heavyweight titleist, Joseph Parker, with the majority 12-round decision over Andy Ruiz. Gabe, if that was a neutral setting, does Andy Ruiz get his hand raised in victory?
I think so. Even though I feel like he left a lot on the table. You know, and it's hard to know. I mean, you know, he's like more like Chris Areola than Vladimir Klitschko in terms of his body. It's just no matter what he does, I don't think we're ever going to see him with a six pack. You know, but so I think
he has more like a keg, Gabe.
Yeah, he does. Like a Stay Puft keg. But you know, so I don't know if it's that or Parker was able to be elusive, but it just felt like Andy disappeared for a lot of the fight offensively. And then he'd kind of wake back up. He started strong, but he just left a lot of fight on the table and let Parker, who I thought threw a lot of bullshitty punches, just kind of pity-pat, jabbing and moving away, and really didn't use his right hand for most of the fight. Andy just let him take the fight. And so I think he got outworked, and that was the difference. But I think on neutral soil, they would say the more telling blow is the hard shots for Andy Ruiz's.
Gabe, I always talk about the home canvas advantage, and that was certainly the case here. And it's what I referenced today is what I call the exchange rate in boxing. That if you are a foreign fighter in a big fight, in a 12-round fight, if you win, let's say, 6, 7, or 8 rounds, the reality is at times you may only win 4 or 5. And the inverse is true for the home fighter. You win 4 or 5 rounds, they'll give you credit for 6 or 7, and next thing you know, you're winning a close decision. He was up in Big Bear at the summit with Abel Sanchez for about 6.5 weeks, got down to 255. I get the sense they need to lose another 10 to 12 pounds because when he tried to close the gap, just simply was not quick enough with his feet because that's a very, very heavy, wide load. Needs to be a little bit quicker. He'll never be a twitchy athlete. He'll never be the guy that looks like a Flex Wheeler. Okay, that's just the reality of it. His gene pool is built that way. Everything you need to know about Andy Ruiz is very simple, Gabe. Will he come back to the summit on January 2nd or 3rd? or he's going to come in March or April. If he comes right around the new year, ready to work, even without a fight scheduled, that shows me something. That means right there he means business, and he'll learn, and he'll grow from this. But if he comes around March or April, and his whole thing is, well, I got to look for a fight to be scheduled, this is just a bigger version of Frankie Gomez, and it's headed to Bolivian. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. This is the next round with Steve Kim and Gable Montoya. Let's go to the Twitter timeline. If you want to chime in, you could do so at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. And, of course, we start with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. And he says, will Heyman and company take advantage of Charlo's momentum? Also, how do you think Charlo will do if he indeed goes to 160? Gabe, he certainly has the size and the frame to go to 160 right now, doesn't he?
And he looks like he's got the punch, you know, and he's coming into his own. I always felt that his brother was he was kind of the raw one with the power, but he seems to have tightened up. I mean, he did get hit with some flush right hands. Even that last sequence, he seemed to take a shot, and he came back with, you know, a hell of a shot that knocked Julian's head off. But, I'd love to see him at 160. He's big for this weight.
And as for the first question, a guy like Charlo, who is relatively unknown, I think at the bare minimum he needs three fights. But when was the last time a PBC fighter at the 12-round championship level got more than twice in a calendar year? By the way, Gabe, we didn't talk about this. How did you like the rather unsportsmanlike behavior of Charlo after the fight where he went full heel? I mean, I have not heard a fighter who's basically not a real natural rival of anybody or a foreign fighter get booed as lustily as he did at the Galen Center on Saturday night.
I'm a good sport, so I don't like what he did. But I was just kind of tripped out by how angry he was. He was so
they all were
like screaming at each other in that corner. I watched it a few times. Like before, Julian ever really came over, he still seemed kind of distressed and angry and unable to kind of calm down and enjoy the moment. I guess he was just hyped off a great win. You know, everybody gets to the next level a different way. But I can understand it. Julian talks a gang of shit, and that's what happens. You know, there's a flip side of that. You're writing a bigger and bigger check every time you talk. And then when you turn around and try to be cool, as Julian did, to his credit, very classy, and still obviously kind of hurt as he walked over there. And he gets rebuffed. I mean, I can understand Julian saying, when Charlo tried to make it better, like, no, I'm good. So a rivalry is born, and Julian has a goal to get back to that fight and get that win back if he can.
You know, I can't be a hypocrite. As someone who's a Miami Hurricane fan, who am I going to complain about unsportsmanlike taunting and celebrating?
Yeah.
And by the way,
you
this is
need
boxing.
To be fined or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, I would much rather have that than Pacquiao and Shane Mosley touching gloves 50 times every round.
Seriously,
give me some real rivalry. If it is authentic and it is real and you hate each other like Chisora and White, and you could transfer that into real action. And by the way, here's the problem with Charlo beforehand. Most people couldn't tell him apart from his brother. I think that's the first time he ever really moved the needle with the public. And I guarantee you there's a lot of people that were there at USC and watching on Showtime. They're now going to say, I can't wait to see Charlo get KO'd. You know what? 20 minutes earlier, you didn't care about Charlo either way. So that's a good thing.
Actually,
so my advice to him is heal it up. Heal it up. Don't stop. Just embrace the hate and monetize it. That's the important thing.
You know, I didn't want to find the guy or anything. You know, like, it's not my bag. But, like, it was exciting. It was like, what the hell's going on? And you're absolutely right. I mean, people are either going to want to watch him to see him do that again or see him get his comeuppance. So either way, it's going to bring people in. That's rare. When you polarize people, that's potential for stardom. And, yeah, I mean, screw it. Be angry. And didn't you have this feeling, this really kind of worry heading into that fight, that it was going to be milquetoast and that they were going to congratulate each other at the end and get all the stuff we didn't like? Instead, we got what we got.
The great part about Marvin Hagler that I loved is if you watch these interviews, and you can get them on YouTube, and the build-up and the lead-up to the fights, and even afterwards, there was always like this tension that Marvin felt like, hey, you're my enemy. You're trying to take food off my plate. You're trying to, like, keep me from buying another home. I want a luxury sports car that I can't get if I lose to you. So this is personal. I don't think that's a bad thing. And by the way, I love the avatar with the president now. It's traditional Marvin Hagler, but instead of wearing a war ball cap, it's a Santa's cap. So happy holidays to everybody from Marvin Hagler and the president. Here's one from Let the Games Begin. What are the next legit options for Crawford, and when does he move to 147 for higher-profile fights? Gabe, in that vein, based on what we know about the business and the way they've handled this career, there's no way he gets Manny Pacquiao, is there?
I don't see how he does. And, you know, I mean, I think it'd be a hell of a fight. It depends on Manny. If Manny wants that challenge, wants that guy – do you think Freddie takes that fight?
No, I don't think Freddie likes that style. And I think any fight that clearly jeopardizes that rematch, which shall not be named, I think it's kiboshed, don't you, Gabe?
Yeah. So you're saying you're Maypac to exit? Or
like
Maypac
I said,
exit?
The rematch that shall not be mentioned. here's a tweet from A. Flores. What's next for Joseph Parker? I was not impressed by him at all. Gabe, I don't think anyone was. He's great for business in New Zealand, in Australia. He'll be a great draw. He'll be an ambassador for the sport. But he's the type of guy, I get the sense, he will rent the title, not own it.
Right. You know, I think they're going to try to make a nice business for him, get him some defenses. Pray the mandatories aren't too bad. And you know, Vlad's number two ranked guy. Andy Ruiz was three. So it's, you know, David Haye is behind him. He's already got a fight with Belu. So it's going to be Huey Fury there at number five when that mandatory comes around. So, you know, I think they could make some money with that guy and use that belt as a shield.
Here's a tweet from Orlando Ortiz. Charlo called out Triple G. Is that fight doable if Jacobs doesn't happen? I guess in theory it is, but again, we know the politics involved. But that's one of the advantages of Golovkin having all these belts, that if a guy like Charlo wants to move up, unless he goes and chases Bluff Job Saunders, all roads lead through Kazakhstan, do they not, at 160?
Yeah. Do you think that fight could get turned around and made in the time frame that they're looking at, Charlo?
You know what?
And
I think, you know, again, do I think Charlo will fight Golovkin next? No, but I'm just saying down the line, let's say within a year. Here's the thing. Charlo says that, well, I've run out of names. I've done everything I could at 154. Really?
Really?
Just look at this. There was a guy that caused a little bit of a ruckus. A guy that you know pretty well, Demetrius Boo Boo Andre, who I believe is very skilled, and if he didn't give his autograph out to Roc Nation and Jay-Z while having an existing contract, I think would be so much farther ahead in his career. But that guy's still out there, and he's in the Showtime universe. You know? Again, if Charlo moved up right now, there would be no real legacy or real accomplishment at 54.
Yeah, I mean, he. How do you? I don't understand. What does he mean? He's done everything at 154. Like, you've been at everybody's house, or because you haven't fought them.
Right, and by the way, I don't expect him to fight his brother. That's not what we're saying. But there are other 54 pounders that they may not be great fighters. I mean, listen, Terry Norris ain't walking through that door. However, there's a lot of guys that I say are good, solid resume-building victories that are out there.
There's no question. I mean, you can't leave 154 without Demetrius Andre. And, you know, Sal Alvarez has a belt at that weight. Arislandi Lara is somebody that no one wants to see fight, but is still at 154. The Charlo brothers haven't even made the most out of the storyline that they're both champions in the same division. They've been kind of beige spots on a beige wall until this weekend. I mean, but that's, you know, I guess when you're used to just winning all the time against easy guys, the first time you face somebody who's, you know, quality but unheralded in Julian Williams and beat him, you feel like you've changed the world or shocked the world. That's the Al Haymon bubble.
Here's one from Big Drama Show. Could the price of pay-per-view in the USA ever go below $50? Honestly, I don't think so. It's almost like asking for $1.50 gas. I think those days are long gone. Listen, I think the pay-per-view model needs to be reexamined. It needs to be blown up maybe to a certain degree. But I will say this. It is absolutely ridiculous, Gabe, that fights like Cotto Kirkland, which I believe will be finalized within a day or two, not only are on pay-per-view, it'll probably be much closer to $70 to $75 than $40 to $50. That is adding insult to injury.
Yeah, that's insult to insanity. What is that fight? I don't understand how that fight makes any sense. James is making money, and Ann's going to be part of the thing again, but I mean, it's just as cynical a fight as you can make. And then to put it on HBO, like you said, it's just an insult.
You know, but let me explain one thing, though. The reason why this fight is on HBO is because of the exorbitant minimums or the contractual terms that Roc Nation gave to Cotto. So I would much rather have this on pay-per-view with Cotto's $10 million guarantee than take up that much of the HBO budget. And I asked somebody at HBO, I said, well, wait a minute, hold on. I said, don't you think it's a little bit of a bad look that just last month you guys told Manny Pacquiao, now we're not doing your pay-per-view, but Cotto Kirkland, yeah, come on. I'm like, wait, that makes no sense at all.
None.
Then it was told to me, well, you know, we do some business with Roc Nation's boss, Jay-Z, and, you know, his wife is someone that we like to, you know, do the concerts with, Beyonce. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that really is going to satiate the HBO boxing subscriber. We want to be in business with concerts that no one else will watch. It speaks for itself. And final tweet here before we go to the phone lines from Fight Day Boxing. For the first time in 20-plus years, I canceled my HBO subscription. Max Kellerman helped break this camel's back. Wow. Wow.
Well, you know, Max is that guy. I mean, he kind of drives me insane. Didn't HBO learn from the first time they dealt with a concert promoter and gave him too much power?
Yeah, what was his name? What happened to that guy? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, let's roll the phone lines here. 805, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
805?
Hey,
hello.
What's up, guys? It's me, Nacho. Hello?
Nacho,
hey,
welcome
Nacho
aboard.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, thanks. As far as the fights this weekend, I was shocked that J-Rock got his butt handed to him the way he did. But I have to give Charlo a lot of credit because I didn't think he was that type of fighter to take him out. And, yeah, that just was like, wow, that came out of nowhere. It was pretty funny, though, that he didn't try to shake his hand or anything after the fight was over. And then once Jim Gray interviews him, Jim Gray is literally hearing the cascade of boos. And he says, people, he's trying to apologize.
You know what's funny, Nacho, as someone who was inside that arena, we didn't hear Jim Gray either. I mean, would have thought that Jermell Charlo came in with the UCLA basketball jersey on. I mean, honestly, I have never seen a fighter get booed that lustily in a situation like that. It was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. As far as the other fight, I thought Mahrez, he surprised me. I didn't think he was going to be able to hold off Cuellar for 12 rounds, but he was able to just basically outbox Cuellar, and Cuellar really had no sense of how to adjust the entire fight, and I thought that was completely bizarre considering he's with Freddie Roach. I thought Freddie would have figured out a way to make an adjustment at some point along the line, but it just seemed like he never knew what to do as far as trying to make an adjustment. And good for Abner. I mean, he becomes relevant in at 126 again. But isn't that an interim belt?
It's a regular version. It's kind of like the Danny Jacobs version of the WBA in essence.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the HBO card, I didn't predict the knockout, but damn, Beltran literally just, I was like, wow, he totally shocked me with that one. I didn't think he was going to take Menard apart like that. That was very surprising. I thought he would win a decision, but man, he good for him that he got a knockout on HBO, and maybe this gets him the title fight that he deserves. But who at 35 would he get a shot at? The problem is they're all on the other side of the street with Heyman.
Well, no, Jorge Linares, although he's already locked up in a rematch clause with Anthony Carolla. You're right. Robert Easter, I believe, gets a voluntary defense. He's fighting in late January in Toledo, Ohio. And then you have Terry Flanagan, who every lightweight has called out for the last 4 or 5 months. But, Gabe, I don't know if you agree with me. All things being equal, the Beltran that I saw on Saturday night, I think is live against any current belt holder at 135.
Oh, there's no question. What about Crawford Beltran at 140?
No, it's the same fight. It's the same fight. And by the way, I think I really believe if there's justice in the boxing world, which there isn't, I'd like to see him get another crack at Ricky Burns. I thought he got screwed against him 3 years ago.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that, but I doubt Burns and his team want any part of that, to be completely honest.
No, no, no.
Yeah, and then with Crawford Molina, I don't know. I think it's time for Molina to seriously reexamine whether he's going to be a legitimate fighter at this point, because it just seemed like there was something. It seemed like he went through the motions, and it almost seemed like he didn't believe that he had a good chance to win that fight. It just kind of felt like he knew he had already lost a chance to win the title on the scale, and it just seemed like after that it was like he just didn't have anything to fight for. It just seemed like he went through the motions and just basically was like, it was like watching a sparring match, and Crawford just took him apart really easy, yeah, it was brutal. So
I didn't like watching it, you know. It was just, why is this happening? And guy misses weight that badly, and it's just a non-effort. And after winning a fight where most people pick John to lose, the Provodnikov fight, how do you not stay in shape and ready for another opportunity and make the most off of that? I don't understand that. He just didn't seem ready.
Exactly. It seemed like he literally just waited till the last minute to start training for a fight instead of staying in the gym trying to see if he could get another fight.
And Gabe,
also,
do you find it interesting that he met all the WBC pre-fight weigh-in protocols? The 30-day he hit, the 7-day he hit, then you're telling me he can only lose one more pound? I don't know.
I'd love for somebody to do an expose on those ends, how they're done, who's there. Are people just bullshitting? You know, I mean, like Floyd and his weight issue where he was dehydrated for the Pacquiao fight, yet was like more than on weight when we were looking at those deadlines. I don't trust them.
Yeah. Nacho, anything else?
Yeah, one last thing. Did you guys get to see the Dillian White, Derek Chisora fight?
What
that
might
have been the best fight of the entire weekend.
What
I was like, wow. Yeah. I would like to see a rematch. I that was such an entertaining ass fight. I would not mind seeing those two guys go at it again.
I'm right with you. They probably need a nice long rest, though. There was some real brutality in that contest.
Yeah, there was. Both guys took a lot of punishment. So, yeah, hopefully they'll do it again. But, yeah, that was probably the best fight of the entire weekend as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Nacho, thank you for the call.
Right,
if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're here to at least 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, so jump on board the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kim.
650, you're live on the next round.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good, what's going
on?
Hey, I'm losing faith in boxing. Big time.
It took you this long?
Never
mind.
Yeah, right? You know, I watched the Andy Ruiz fight twice, and Harold Lederman is – he's just getting old and senile, because effective aggression means you're pushing a fighter back while scoring and keeping him on his toes. Andy Ruiz had a great body shot jab that he just kept on delivering. It threw Parker off his game. and he had him backing up the entire fight with that scoring jab, and nobody would say anything. I'm like, he's pushing the guy back because he keeps on throwing the body shot. Boom, boom, boom. And when he got in close, he landed. He landed good power shots. He outpunched. He didn't outpunch.
Clean punching.
But clean punching, his percentage was higher. I just can't get – I mean, I can't believe they didn't give that fight to that kid. He deserved it. He won it. And, again, we're just looking at a – you know, it's just a disgraceful decision.
And just remember one thing, though. In defense of Harold Lederman, for that particular fight, he was not ringside. Since that fight took place in Auckland, my guess is he probably did that off a television monitor in one of the production trucks of HBO. So, again, you do get a different vantage point.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, I do you think Ruiz is done? I mean, I know he's not a pretty guy.
Done, no.
Doesn't have a great personality.
Okay. If he is not seen in at the summit in like 2-3 months, yeah, he's done. That meant he's going to give it one shot and he's going to shut it down. But if he's back in relatively short period, that means he's committed to it. I think that is everything. How fast will he be back working with Abel Sanchez and his crew?
Boy, I hope soon, because I'll tell you, I bet you it was 6 years ago I was at the Wild Card Gym, and I got the pleasure to watch this guy spar, just local guys, and my eyes just lit up like that guy is a great boxer. And, you know, he's a big boy, but he can move, and he can counter, and he's got great timing. And I just hope to see him again. I really, really do, because I think he can. You know, beat, he definitely blow David Hay away. And
That would be an interesting fight. No doubt about that. That would be an interesting fight. Listen, all he did was lose a fight. This was not an elimination bout for your career. It wasn't do or die. So again, let's see how committed he is going into 2017.
Well, I sure hope so. And thanks for your time, you guys. Great show.
All right. Thank you very much. If you want to jump in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
530, you're live on the next round.
Hello, Gabe, Steve, it's Ringside Robert here.
Robbie, welcome aboard.
What's up, man?
First of all, congratulations, Gabe. Now you might get a real football coach, and hopefully for your sake, it's an offensive guru that knows how to develop a quarterback. That's what the Rams need to do.
Yes.
The unfortunate part about this, now Jeff Fisher and Dan Reeves will be forever tied with the most losses in her career at 165. It's kind of too bad that Jeff Fisher couldn't have gotten that record all by himself on Thursday.
Yeah.
That's another story. But on to boxing. Look, I got a couple of broadcast issues I want to point out here.
Oh, please do. Please do.
Roy Jones, what kind of planet was he on Saturday night? I mean,
Robbie. Isn't he always on Planet RJ regardless?
Oh, my God. But Saturday was the worst I've ever heard.
Was it, Gabe? Gabe, you tell me. Was it?
Because I'm talking about during the Parker-Ruiz fight where he's talking about Joseph Parker like he was actually in the ring himself. I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was like, seriously, you know? Talking about
actually, I didn't hear his commentary on that fight. I watched the New Zealand.
So I can't even comment on that.
You know what? You guys were smart to do that because it was awful. And normally I agree with you guys on Max, but actually Max was on his best behavior on Saturday night compared to what Roy did. But as far as Showtime is concerned, look, I love the idea of them showing the international fights. But they came on at 5:30 Eastern for that.
Yeah, you know what happened, Robbie? They, again, the production is controlled by Eddie Hearn and Sky Sports.
Right.
And I think a lot of the undercard fights ran long. In fact, my recording, I'm lucky I stood home where I would have missed it. And then I grabbed this, I listened to the Dillian White-Chisora fight on the radio.
Right.
And literally, as that fight ended, the Showtime window to show Joshua ended. The timing was actually very, very perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. A couple of things. They either need to work on doing their windows better, or why don't – since Showtime wants to be the one to give us more boxing, and I thought I would never say that about HBO, but since Showtime wants to be the new network of boxing, why don't they sign an exclusive deal with somebody like Sky Sports so we can actually see these fights, you know, live, and we don't have to depend on the Showtime crew in the afternoons like this?
That's an interesting idea, but again, I don't know how corporate budgets or agendas and, you know, again, that would be a question more for Stephen Espinoza than Steve Kim.
Well,
Steve, good idea though, Robbie.
That's why I threw it out. Maybe you could ask the question one day. But as far as the fights were concerned, I don't have a problem with most of the decisions. I was shocked on a couple of them. I mean, Joshua did what he was supposed to do, but Eric Molina and John Molina, ironically enough, they both need to find new careers because they showed on Saturday that neither one of them belong in the ring anymore. And they're probably not related, but their performances indicated maybe they are from the same family tree. I don't have a problem with Parker winning the fight. I thought Ruiz did what he had to do. And I agree with you. He needs to lose about 15 more pounds and really take his career seriously, or he could be walking around with that belt. Crawford, I don't think he's going to get another decent fight at 140, Steve. I think he's going to have to move up now. And I do think that Bob will give him Pacquiao if Pacquiao cannot get the rematch that will not be named.
Yes, yes. Anything else, Robbie?
No, we had a good weekend of fights, and I'm looking forward to 2017, and hopefully the executioner don't get hurt on Saturday, because I think Joe Smith is a live dog in that
Ooh.
Fight. Don't be surprised.
Okay, Robbie, you are on the record now.
See you later.
Okay, Robbie.
All right.
Thank you very much. 347-215-7598. A little bit later, we have fight preview coming up. Also, some other news and notes. Gabe?
281, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. Nate from Houston. How you doing?
Oh.
Hey, what's up,
Nate? What's going on?
Oh, man, just chilling. Great weekend of fights. I thought I'd just weigh in on Julian Williams a little bit. You know, I was really looking forward to that fight because, you know, I think I had only seen Williams maybe once before that, and Charlo maybe a handful, and, you know, both of them against tomato cans, you know. And you know, with kind of all the, I guess, you know, media hype with Williams, I was just really looking forward to seeing that. And, you know, he did some really good things in there, but, I mean, it didn't seem like, you know, I came out of it going, doesn't look like he's got too much power, because even when he was catching Charlo flush, it just didn't ever even make Charlo blink. And, you know, and I really do, I think that his J-Rock's chin is going to be a problem. You know, it's not that.
Yeah,
it's not that,
it
it's
is,
not
but
that
keep this in
target.
Mind.
It was that jab. I mean, he was doing the funky chicken when he got up from that. He was hurt.
He
keep this
him.
In mind.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing him to Terry Norris, but I'm using this example. Terry never had a great chin, and in his first title shot was against Julian Jackson, one of the hardest-hitting fighters of all time. I'll never forget it, watching it on ABC. In the first round, Terry Norris looked like Ray Leonard. I mean, he was spectacular. And then second round, he drops his hands on the ropes for a second, and bang. And it was kind of a pattern. Guys could shake up Terry Norris, but he rebounded to have a really great career. So let's see how this plays out. By the way, guys, you know who the corner man was that lost that fight, Norris Jackson? Abel Sanchez.
Oh, Abel Sanchez.
Yes.
Yeah,
really?
Abel Sanchez.
Yeah.
You know, and it also is, you know, people are saying that, well, that Williams doesn't have power, or that Williams is chinny because he didn't take that punch and landed some good shots and Charlo didn't blink. We might find out Charlo has an iron chin and that Julian hits just fine, you know. And I thought he backed him off a little bit. He also showed some different looks, changed his tactics. By the fourth, he was back in the fight. And even the third, I thought he was back in the fight. Once he got knocked down, he got back up. I thought he responded very well, landed some good shots that stemmed the tide. I mean, that shot, who takes that punch and makes it up? Not many people.
Gabe,
you know?
I was able to speak to the bread man afterwards at the fight hotel, and he said, Steve, after the knockdown, I could see it. We never got our legs back. Again, when you get hit, you never know what could happen. A Pandora's box literally opens up. Yeah. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and for Charlo, yeah, I would really like to see a lot more of him now. You know, I just hope that they put him against some good opposition because there's a lot out there. I know it's probably fantasy about Canelo, but that would be interesting, I think.
Mm.
Canelo has another guy to run from.
whoa, Gabe! Gabe! Whoa!
157, geez. Here he comes.
Oh, wow, Gabe. Whoa, that's the hatering there. Strong. Woof, geez.
Hey, well, speaking of running, what's the timeline for the old first bid for...
Oh, it's going to be next Monday in Panama, and we'll see where it goes from there. I'm of the belief that if Jacobs and Golovkin do not make a deal or come to some sort of an agreement for March 18th, I think it's forever hold your peace, and I think Golovkin needs to go about his business. I think they've already wasted a date. Tom Loeffler, I think, made one of his few tactical errors. I would have fought December 10th. I don't hold up my business for fighters who don't have a business. And I think next year Loeffler needs to stop being Mr. Nice Guy and start calling people out, start releasing terms, start getting down and dirty. You've tried the nice guy routine. You've tried to be diplomatic. It ain't working. Start sullying guys' reputation. Start embarrassing them. This is boxing, you know. But anyway, anything else?
I agree. Nope, that's it. I'll let you get running. I know you got a long line.
All right, thank you very much. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who else is on the line?
You know, it's funny. That actually was my same advice to the Democrats. Let's go with a blocked number or an unlisted number. You're live on the next round. Nothing? You can't tell that you're on? All right, forget it. I hate those. 510, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe. Hey, Steve. How you guys doing, friend, over here in Richmond?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, first of all, I think the advice for Steve has for Tom Loeffler, I think that should go for Gennady as well, man. Gennady, I know it's in him. He needs to start talking a little more trash to these bums, man. They're, like, ducking him and diving him, man.
But you know what?
You gotta be a little more...
Trash talk from the fighter is just that. I don't think it does anything. But when you actually release the terms, and you don't have to release everything, but just give the general parameters of what was turned down, I think that's much more effective than saying, stop ducking me. Just going all Clubber Lang, I don't know what that really changes at this point.
Well, it also helps sell any fight that he does come into, right? You know, that's part of it, too. I have a question, too. Peter Nelson, I read, like, a few weeks ago that he was the one that fired Bill Simmons from his TV show. How involved is Peter Nelson in boxing? Is this like a side part of him, or is he in charge of the HBO boxing?
Let me just tell you something, okay? He has other responsibilities. Now, I don't know if he's the one that fired, if you want to use that term, for Bill Simmons. I do not know. But it's like being the athletic director at the University of Alabama. Yes, Alabama has women's softball, a golf team. They play basketball. But you really have to take care of one thing, football. That's what pays the bills. That's your identity. That's the branding of the school, right? Well, when you're at HBO Sports, you might do documentaries. You do real sports. But what's the one live sport that you're associated with? Boxing.
Boxing.
Speaking of which, Gabe, HBO announced today that they're doing an Ali documentary. Now, okay, I don't want to be cynical, but do we need another Ali documentary, Gabe? Haven't there been enough?
You know, I don't think we've had enough pictures taken of him.
How about another book? Would you like to read another book about him? I mean,
you know, maybe Tom Hauser could squeeze out one more chapter. You know, I don't understand it.
My point is this. Look at Showtime. Their documentaries are fresh and they're new. Like the Ben Simmons One and Done, I thought was very well done. I got a trailer for this will warm your heart. The Lawrence Phillips documentary. Okay, I thought was really good. Okay, and as someone that is a Southern California guy, to see this kid that played in Baldwin Park, West Covina, that area, I was very interested. He beat the Miami Hurricanes in the 95 Orange Bowl and was this incredibly troubled but great prospect. They're going back to Ali. You know, instead of doing an Ali documentary because you want to be in business with LeBron James, Hey, guys, wouldn't you rather see another edition of Legendary Knights?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, or a documentary on another fighter. You know, I guess they'll do the definitive story. They've been waiting to do this, but, I mean, we know the story.
Yeah.
Read the book.
It's been told a few times, hasn't it, Gabe? Jeez.
You just, well, that, and it's such a big, you know, it's such a long and full life. I mean, When We Were Kings is just a snapshot of one of his great moments, and there's so much in there. You know, I mean, it's hard to get a whole life in like 2 hours. I just don't see the point, but, you know.
Yeah. Fernando, anything else?
Yeah, one of the best HBO movies I've ever seen in my life, and it came out a long time ago, you can't even find it, you got to find it on eBay, is Don King Only in America, man. That movie is so good. Ving Rhames does a great job in that movie.
Right?
I don't know if you ever watched it.
Yeah, that's based on the book by the old writer that passed away years ago from, I think, Jack Newfield. It was a very good book.
Yeah, the movie is super entertaining. Anyways, one last thing. I'm wondering now with this whole Danny Garcia and Al Heyman, is part of the game plan the same one they used against Kovalev? Try to kind of like punk him at the end when it comes to the purse bid? That's what it seems like to me. Like to
you
make
mean with
Jacobs? Kind of look bad.
I don't really know. All I know is this. They have a date, K2, for March 18th at the Garden. He's going to fight. We just don't know who yet. Fernando, we got to run.
You.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Gabe, here's a
Thank
tweet from Jizz Money, who says, the last time Beltran looked that good, he was juiced to the gills. Bet anything he was juiced. You know, anyone that has suspicions about guys that have tested positive before and aren't doing extra testing, you know what? I'm not going to disagree. You absolutely have that right to be suspicious.
I said it in more veiled fashion because I, as Paulie Malignaggi says, don't be a vigilante. But this weekend, you know, with Charlo and Williams, that fight didn't have any testing, high-level fight. When the trend is now going the other way with the WBC's clean boxing program, like 200 fighters are enlisted, and how many fighters have done it at this point? It's a long list. It doesn't make any sense that these guys aren't doing it. And watching the fights, I was like, you know, in some ways I wish I'd never written about PEDs because I don't always enjoy what I watch. Because a guy having a 3-knockout streak at age 35, after being a guy that always goes rounds and does just enough to lose, has a drug suspension, and then 3 knockout wins like this, at 35, I'm like, what is this? You know, ties to Memo, says he wasn't with him, and then apparently is with Memo Heredia. It is what it is. And Charlo, too, you know, I don't know all that much about what's going on around him, but why wasn't there testing for this fight? Why is it?
By the way, I didn't watch the Showtime broadcast. Was Paulie up in arms over the lack of testing? Because isn't he like the Showtime conscience when it comes to drug testing and stuff like that? Or I guess not.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. Here's a tweet from Evan Young at Boxing Forecast. My guess is that if Bernard Hopkins wins easily, he won't go away. I'm not so sure he'll ever really go away. Gabe, I disagree. I think this is it for him. I think he's ready to turn this long chapter, turn the page on it, and go into the next phase of his life. That's the sense that I get.
Yeah, everybody wants to go out with a win and go out your way and face one last dangerous moment. But I think he's done after this. Where does he go from here, you know? I think it's going to be a fun fight, too. I think the dude's going to bring it.
347. 215-7598. If you want to send us a tweet, you could do so at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe?
860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's CT.
CT!
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Hey, I just want to talk about the Charlo and Williams fight. It was a very, very high highly technical skills fighters. And I never saw that punch coming. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure Williams didn't see it coming.
Neither did Julian.
But that's what I was thinking about. Mainly, I thought both fighters were very good at what they do. But it's the way Williams was brought up. He hasn't really been tested against a puncher yet. I think he has all the skills. I think he can still be champion. I think he'll bounce back. But I think it was just a learning experience about him coming up in the ranks. How do you guys feel about about what happened that Saturday.
Gabe?
Yeah, I don't disagree. You know, I was texting Steve. I think that night was like, this is, in some ways, what happens. Not just like getting hit like that, but I don't think he respected Charlo's power nearly enough, and wasn't completely defensively mindful. Although uppercuts, it's that punch. You could be guarding yourself, you could be paying attention, but an uppercut counter like that, one, only special athletes land punches like that and land it with such force. And Charlo looks like he might be a special athlete. But, you know, all the things around a knockdown, staying on your knee all the way to 8 or 9 if you've got to get yourself together, not going into fighter mode. Although I think after the uppercut knockdown, the second knockdown, he was just fighting on instinct. But still, no clinching, didn't grab and hold and just like, you know, try to do things that way. Instead, it was fighting back. And, of course, he's going to get hit again because the other guy's got his senses. And so you lose. All that stuff, you could get that experience if you had some adversity. But they were more concerned, I think, concerned with getting wins and building a record as opposed to fully building a fighter.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the Heyman way. And I think that's a pattern. We've seen this pattern. You know, it's now a pattern. It's not, oh, I think this is like a random criticism of Al Heyman, you know.
Anything else, BT?
I'm excited about Joshua fighting Klitschko in April. I know it's not going to be coming until April, but yeah, me too. I think it's going to be questions to be asked about Joshua too, because I don't think Klitschko will you know, clinch like the rest of these opponents have. I think Klitschko has the savvy and experience to show Joshua a few things. So,
you know, even though Klitschko, I believe the best of him is in the rear view mirror. Certainly a very long layoff, didn't look good against Tyson Fury. I think even now, Klitschko represents the sternest test Joshua will have had as a professional. That's where the intrigue lies. How does he handle that?
No doubt. It's going to be the polish, I think, like kind of the cherry on top of this phase of his career. Is taking that guy. I hope it goes rounds and that he doesn't just blow out a shell of a Vladimir, but that it at least goes 5 or 6. There's some exchanges, and he can get that experience of being in with a guy that's fought everybody and has lost and come back. I mean, Vlad brings so much to the table for him. I mean, I'm really just glad that everybody's taking this chance. This is what makes boxing great. I don't think it'll ever get back to being as popular as a football and baseball, like when we were part of that kind of, you know, it was baseball and boxing. I don't think we'll ever get back there again, but certainly this can be a great display of what makes the sport the best sport there is. CT?
All right, thank
yeah,
you very much. CT, anything
all
else?
Right. Oh,
I guess not. Here's a tweet from Coach Larry, good friend. Guys, I was in Omaha, and the crowd was just insane. World championship fights in more cities help grow boxing again, or just hometown kid? You know, I think, again, you have to be very mindful of what region you are talking about. And, you know, again, the L.A. Dodgers draw well because they play a lot of games in L.A. And
right.
It just never made sense to me when you'd have fighter A from a certain city, let's say like San Diego, and then fighter B from like, let's say, Tijuana, and then you fight him at Chumash. You know, listen, Terrence Crawford being popular in Omaha is not only good for Terrence Crawford, it's good for the business of boxing. They need more major cities to have fighters that are developed as draws and not shipped out to casinos and Indian reservations. You know, you could do that at the developmental level, and I do a lot of those shows, but there comes a point when you're a 12-round champion, start trying to actually develop these guys. Think about it, Gabe, and I know it's a different world, but Eddie Hearn doesn't put fighters thousands of miles from their hometown. There is some logic to what they do geographically.
Well, and there's never been any logic to what Al Heyman does with his fighters geographically. I was watching this fight this weekend. I'm like, this is really weird. A guy from Houston and a guy from Philadelphia fighting at the Galen Center in Los Angeles. Like,
right.
Why
and
does this
and
mean,
in that vein,
you know?
Bernard Hopkins should be fighting somewhere on the East Coast. let's be honest about it. You know, I mean, they got stuck with this deal because they thought they were going to do Salido Miura. But again, and listen, at least they're trying to round the card out with the local kids. But Bernard Hopkins, you would think, you know, he is from Philadelphia, last I checked. But, you know, I don't make those decisions. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
Yeah, it is very strange. 323, you're live on the next round.
Hello, guys. This is Dave LeMelman. How you guys doing?
Hey,
what's
Dave,
up, man?
Welcome aboard.
You know what? I guess to start it off on a good note, you know what? I'm really happy that Jeff Fisher finally got canned.
Thank you, Eric Dickerson.
Oh, man. It's just horrific. And another thing to say, you know what? Tom Loeffler won't say it, and I don't hear it in the news, but what Jacobs is probably asking is a retirement package. So I think Triple J at this point should just, you know, move on and just leave, because it's just from that negotiation, it's just getting impossible at this point, I guess.
I think next year they got to get four fights, and whoever's coming to the table within reason, try to make a deal. Hopefully they get a guy like Canelo. And, you know, I don't know if they'll ever get B.J. Saunders. I don't know if Chris Eubank will ever find his pen. But I think the next 12 months will be very interesting to see if they could actually entice some of these big names in the ring with him.
I got a question. I guess this is not being heard by the media, but what's with the Lomo-Salido negotiations? Because the only person I see on Twitter is Sean Gibbons saying that they deserve more money. And so I'm saying, like, what's going on? Like, Tom Ryan doesn't say anything.
Well, Bob's coming back from New Zealand. I talked to Sean, and he said, Steve, we're going to talk to Bob Arum once he gets back. And I think he's back here now. And they're going to try to go through the terms. You know, me personally, I wish that he wouldn't have pulled out of the Tak Miura fight. I think that's a better fight for him. You know, but, again, I let the business people take care of the business.
And that's all for me, guys. I hope you have a good night. And thanks for, I guess, acknowledging that there was no drug testing on that Charlie Williams stuff, and probably keeping his mouth shut.
All we try to do is inform and entertain, Dave. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, let's roll down to 929. This is a usual prefix. 929. You're live on the next round.
Or not.
Anything? Yeah.
Bueller? Bueller?
He's done wrapping up the body. Maybe I'll go back to him. 917, you're live on the next round. No, with some sort of struggle going on in there.
Yeah, geez.
917?
Hey, guys. 917. How you doing? It's Joe in New York. Can you hear me?
Hey,
Joe, what's up, Joe?
What's going on?
Hey, it's been a minute, guys. Hope you're doing well.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about my man, Mason Menard.
Man, just was not ready. You know what I call him now? Sheez it. He wasn't ready.
Oh, man, he totally wasn't. You know, I got to say, and, like, you know, this is not a science, and you can't be right every time. Like, you know, hey, I thought J-Rock was going to wreck Jermall Charlo, and, you know, that was a really great fight, but you saw how it played out. You know, Charlo was just really, really strong. But, guys, I got to give you a little bit of hard time about that old Mason Menard, man. I mean, I saw him fight. I saw him in his last fight, and I was like, all right, so he can sock a little, but I just was like, as soon as Juan Diaz couldn't be in the fight anymore, I just thought, man, Beltran's finally going to get a knockout for the first time, and he bludgeoned Menard, and he beat his ass for 7-8 rounds.
He really did.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could just see, though, I don't know where Menard's going to go from here. Does he still want to do this? Does he want to pick up the pieces? But I do know this. Ray Beltran, those hundreds and thousands of rounds sparring Manny Pacquiao, they have really forged the guy. He's not going to be intimidated by anyone in that ring. You may beat him. You're not going to, like, hammer him. I'll say that much.
He's another guy, too, with a lot of late career resurgence. You know, not that he was really – you know, like he had been beaten down and he was trying to pull himself. Like, I just really felt like he never really got the full recognition and his skill set never came together at the perfect time. I think he's actually still improving and still moving forward. I mean, he's not the upper echelon where he's going to beat the top guys, but man, he just shows more skill, more grit, more determination each fight. And again, if he's matched correctly, he can continue on for a number more years. And he's like a more refined Siri Salido in some ways, you know?
That's actually a comparison that's been brought up to me, and you know, I don't necessarily disagree.
Yeah.
And Joe, I couldn't have been more wrong making this pick. It was you know, every once in a while you just go, what the hell was I thinking? Man versus boy, it was a professional ass whooping. I mean, he
really was.
Went to the body. When the kid decided, oh, I'm going to go to the ropes, he just tore him apart. And you could actually just see all of Menard's flaws. Like, I thought, okay, he's got a little more athleticism and explosion. And in this, it's like, oh, no, he's just got a terrible punching frame and a kind of a soft, weak guard that is just getting pummeled with hooks and ups. But the finisher, I thought, was really tremendous. And you could see that the kid was tired, frustrated, and getting boxed circles around. The way he moved his foot one way and then back the other and then just got knocked out, it was all experience, I think.
My four-year-old was walking through the room when I was watching the replay the next morning. He looks at his screen and he goes, Daddy, he's not very good, is he? And he just keeps walking out. I was like, wow.
Wow. Nice.
I know I'm calling in a bit late now on the thing. I'm sure you guys talked about that Charlo Williams fight. I got to say, you know, regardless of who won and who lost, I think the fans really won. I know that's a little cliche to say. That was such a really enjoyable fight in such a high level of skill. It was so back and forth. And I got to give it to J-Rock, man. I mean, he tasted that power early and he adjusted. And I thought he was schooling Charlo. Remember, we were talking about the look on Nicholas Walter's face the round before he quit, about how dejected he looked. Charlo
going to
the corner in the fifth round looked really dejected.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I was really surprised. But we're learning about him, right? So who knows? Maybe that's just his demeanor. But I didn't get the sense that they were like, yeah, we won that round. We're all good. Going into that last round, I felt like the tide had turned a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Charlo tasted the power, got a little in love with it, thought he was just going to ice him, and then started getting frustrated because Williams was really adjusting, and he was starting to hurt him, I thought, a little bit too. But, I mean, you definitely did see that Charlo's definitely – I mean, he should move to middleweight sooner than later, I would think. He's a big dude. I didn't realize. I mean, because I know J-Rock is a good-sized middleweight or a junior middleweight, but, man, Charlo looked ginormous in there in the ring that night. But, I mean, still very impressive, though. And, like, I understand the crowd getting all mad about everything. I didn't feel bad one way or another. I thought it was fine, and I thought – in the end, you know, even Tempest, again, these guys are fighting each other. Let's not make them be butlers in between every round. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's not like he shoved him, you know, and got all crazy on him.
Right, and it's not like he was a prone guy on a gurney being taken off as he was unconscious.
True.
If he did that, that is completely out of line, and he would deserve all the derision he gets. But you're right, this is, last time I still checked, it is the hurt game. This is the fight game. It ain't tennis.
Who was that fight? Do you remember that fight when Jadon Codrington got laid out by
Alan Green? And Alan Green's
Alan
giving shout-outs to his sponsors. I remember that. Yeah,
Cadillac.
I was on Showbox.
Car dealership. Brutal. Fernando Vargas spitting on Ross Thompson after knocking him down. You know?
Cool.
It can get worse, you know?
Yeah.
This was words.
Yeah, totally, totally. Guys, as always, thanks so much for taking my call. Have a great night, all right?
You too.
Hey, you too.
Stay well. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Kind of running out of calls here. It's the 405. You're live on the next round.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
It's Santos from Oklahoma.
Santos,
hey,
welcome aboard,
up?
Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
I want to say, I'm not sure I barely got on. And did that guy talk about the great fight Chavez gave Junior?
Yeah, listen, he proved one thing. He can make 68, and against guys who are kind of overmatched and smaller, he kind of looks like he usually does.
It kind of surprised me he came in at 167, even a pound under, I think, 167. But I was going to ask you guys, what do you guys see next for him? I guess he had called out that he wants a catch with Canelo or Gennady next, and I think Gilbert Ramirez said he wants it with him.
Gabe,
you,
I don't know about
you,
but if he wants to build credibility and really, again, create true interest where we could take this seriously against whoever, listen, Gilberto Ramirez said, hey, I'll fight you. Well, you know what? That's a guy with the belt at 68. Beat him and let's work from there.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think to build credibility, he's got to maybe even fight a little bit higher class of fighter next time, which shouldn't be too hard. Make the weight. I think he's got to get a track record going because right now, how do you trust Chavez Jr. for anything bigger than the card he was fighting on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and another thing, one more thing. Charlo, I can't remember if it was after the fight that he had said they had mentioned like who was next for him, and he said, of course, his other brother's a champion. He said he wouldn't fight Lada because he's a gym partner. I don't agree with that stuff. If it's not your brother your brother, if there's another guy holding the belt, you have to take him out. I don't care if it's your gym partner. You talk to Shields and say, hey, I got to go my own way for this fight, but you got to get that belt.
Listen, I get it. You're close to people. You have friends. But at the same time, then, deal with those consequences. But again, I do understand him not fighting his brother. I don't expect that.
Yeah, but
no.
That's all I got, guys. But you guys have a good night.
All right.
Thanks,
thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't want to see him fight his brother. That doesn't make any sense to me. Let's see. Actually, I think we've cleared the board here, Steve.
All right. Well, before we get going, we want to mention this. HBO Latino this Friday night from Fantasy Springs. I'll be working the international broadcast with Beto Duran. And, Gabriel, this is a hell of a show. Antonio Orozco takes on Fidel Maldonado. The light heavyweight battle, I really like. Vyacheslav Shabransky takes on Sully B. Sullivan Barrera. Got a welterweight battle between Eddie Gomez and Rashidi Ellis. And this, I don't think this will be on the broadcast, but featherweight's crossroads bout between Ronnie Rios and Roy Tapia. Gabe, I'm excited about working this card. I mean, top to bottom, from the very beginning, you're going to see prospects and some real old-fashioned prize fights here.
Are they going to put the Rios fight like on their live stream at all?
I believe they are. I believe they are.
Yeah, that's a hell of a fight. Yeah, top to bottom, this is an early Christmas gift to boxing fans. This is I'm going with Shabransky against Barrera. I like the guy's power. I like that his combinations, and I like his trainer, Manny Robles, a lot. I just think they're firing on all cylinders. But, this could be a great fight because Barrera, with that letdown with the Ward fight, what's he going to bring? Is he going to do more? How does he rebound, and get to that next level? That fight's like dynamite to me. Who do you got in that one?
I like Shabransky. I think he's too well-rounded. I like Orozco because I think he's tougher than Fidel Maldonado. And Gomez Rashidi Ellis, oof. That's a toss-up.
I'm going Gomez. I kind of like Gomez. I like his combinations. I like he's got that loss, but he's rebounded well from it. I think he's moved past it. I just have a feeling about him. I like Orozco too, and I like Rios.
And Gabe, couple of news and notes here before we finish it out here. January 28th, it was announced last week. Golden Boy HBO, they got a show featuring Tak Miura in a co-feature alongside Francisco Vargas. The understanding is they're trying to set up the rematch of that bout. On that undercard is the return of Turiano Johnson, who had a rotator cuff injury on his right side last year, has not fought since last October 17th. So you'll see the return of him. Also, Randy Caballero, he has re-signed with Golden Boy Promotions. Gabe, one question here. I'm being dead serious, and I am not trying to be facetious. With James Kirkland getting the Cotto fight, where does that leave Lamont Peterson? I'm being dead serious. What is going on? He had literally not fought since Lemieux Golovkin, October 17th, 2015.
I have no idea. That's it's strange because when he was with Golden Boy, he didn't feel like he was being treated that great. and he's with Al, and he's kind of in the same situation. I don't know if it's him. I don't know what it is. You know, is he not good enough to beat guys, but too hard to for his, you know, the guys sleeping on silk sheets, they don't want to fight him? I don't know what the deal is there.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of the Next Round. We're at 90 minutes exact here. So this was more or less a 10-round edition of the Next Round. On behalf of David Duenas and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, on behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying goodbye, everybody.